Well, we used to reach for the phone book to find a number for somebody, or maybe type, or even handwrite letters to friends. We used to do that, too. We used to pick up the phone, catch up with our buddies. But chances are these days you're using a computer, and specifically the Internet, to do a lot of that and a whole lot more. Even if you keep up with new developments in the computer world, if you're like me, you need some help once in a while. And lucky for you and for me, we have Peter Green with us. And he is great to help. He's been doing it for a long time on the show. Great to have him back. And certainly happy to have you listening in today. And if you have some questions or comments for him about your computer or about the Internet in general, love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'd love to hear from you. And Pete, great to have you back.
Always great, Larry.
Hear a lot of it, about personal information and data being available on the web. I think it comes to mind most often when there's some sort of security breach notice that's out there, and you wonder, oh my goodness, is my information out there? And I expect there's a whole lot of data out there on me and on you and on everybody else that we probably would be surprised to know.
Well, you know, the term social networking is really what the web has become. And there are what are called, I would call, closed databases. And then there are databases that are apparently closed but have some openings to them.
Yeah.
And then there are some open databases that are simply, it's almost like the data is being resold so it can be reused by other sites that want to also try to gain in popularity by leveraging that information. There's a lot of ways to search for it. There are the popular search engines are Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Remember we talked a long time ago about Alta Vista,
right?
And there were others, but those are the three popular ones. They have just your basic searches, and then they also have advanced searches,
right?
And then they have image searches, and then they have group searches, you know, like discussion groups. Then you have the social networking components like Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn, Google Plus, to be able to search for and find people. And I think it was the last show we talked about, you know, not reusing your password.
Yeah.
Well, think about reusing your username or nickname on a site and reusing it on other sites. You know, the question becomes asking yourself, do you want to be found or do you not want to be found?
Yeah.
Because you can have the same username being repopulated and being searched for and found from other sites, not just one site, but multiple sites. And then there are business searches for, like, LinkedIn is considered kind of a professional community. Facebook crosses both personal and business. And then there are databases out there that have public records. I gave a couple examples, and they're all posted on the top 10 page. Kind of summarized it.
At Infostar.com.
At Infostar.com. For example, in Wisconsin, you've got the Wisconsin court system, which has what they fondly call CCAP, C-C-A-P, which gives you access to court records throughout the state of Wisconsin. You can fine-tune your searches and so forth through counties and last names, and, you know, it's all up there.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the local entities have, you know, property tax information based on, you know, parcel information or address or by name, you know, the amount, you know, if it's paid or not paid. I mean, that's all publicly accessible. You just have to know where to go for it. So, you know, you use a search engine, you find where it is and you can get it. Or you can go through some of these other sites that I listed that basically, and they're all listed on this page. I don't want to keep reiterating them, but some of them will sell you access to that data, you know, make it, you know, like for today's day, you know, today's price is, you know, $2.95 for this information, or if you want to buy it for a year, maybe it's $29.95 or $39.95. And then the other part of that is sometimes they'll sell you, like maybe you sign on for a year, but they give you a 7-day window of a trial. So you accept a 7-day window of trial, you pay for it, but if you cancel before the 7 days are up, then you get your money back. So there's some games you can play with, that kind of stuff, to see what information they're giving you access to. There's death records, birth records, marriage records, divorce records, criminal records. I mean, the list goes on and on. So, you know, if you're real curious about, you know, where you fit in this world, in the online world, in the social networking, you know, I've given you access to a lot of different sites to try and you know, business-wise and personal-wise, you know, it's all out there.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I have a friend, she was thinking about dating a guy, and she looked him up on the court records.
Mm-hmm.
And found some information she didn't like, so she didn't date him.
Yeah.
So you know, there's a lot out there, and you I think most of us would be surprised,
yeah,
at what you can find. Well, I'm sure there are going to be questions relating to that as we go move
you
along
can,
today.
You can do reverse lookups of information, you know, phone numbers, addresses.
Yeah, somebody's going to say, what's a reverse lookup? How do you do that?
You're trying to find out. Okay, let's say you've got the phone number, but you want to see who it belongs to. So you put the phone number in and it gives you
the name of the person. Yeah.
Right.
There you go. Sparky in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, good morning. There's something that's been puzzling me. I have quite a few items on my desktop that I can click on and get on to wherever I want to go, like AOL or Yahoo, Gmail, the weather. And sooner or later, it sets up so that in the address bar, the address is quite long. It just goes on for many, many digits. And if I just click on the desktop and say, type in Gmail, whammo, I've got it. And so I'm puzzled as to why this happens.
So are you talking about the address in like a search line, or are you talking about the address on a desktop icon?
The address in the browser that I use, the address line.
Yeah. Do you want to get rid of it?
Well, I want to continue to use, you know, the icons on my desktop that
right.
I can click on and get where I'm going, but
right.
It's not working.
Yeah, in the browser, there are some of these web addresses get incredibly long, and it's because they're using certain web tools to either, you know, track people, you know, visiting their websites or... it's a way of some of the web components generating access to a web page that may be found as a result of a search engine. You can clear the history in your browser, so those addresses will go away, and then as you use them, they'll come back.
Okay.
So typically in the browser, you look under preferences or tools. Or options, and within that you'll find something that talks about clearing the history, clearing the cache. So you're basically cleaning the slate and starting over with it.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Yeah, keep in mind though, you know, if you're using cookies and you clear the cookies, that if you're logging into some of your websites that are typically like maybe banking or for your cell phone provider, maybe your energy bill and some other things like that, that you'll have to re-log in because that information will go away. It'll be cleared out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's fine. I can deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, yep. Thanks, Sparky. Steve in Kewanee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks, and you perform a great service for everybody out here.
Thank you.
I've got a comment and a question. A comment is there's a regarding the tracking software out there. There's a free download called Ghostery that tracks over 1,000 trackers and gives you a roll call of the ad networks, behavioral data providers, web publishers, and all these other companies that are interested in your activity. So you can log their activity, and you can stop it on your computer if you wish. It's called Ghostery.
The one thing is related to that, when you do stuff like that, sometimes it affects how your browsing continues when you're on some of these websites.
It's slightly a little slower,
yeah,
perhaps, but you don't get all these stupid things coming jumping out at you.
Mm-hmm.
it's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, it just drives me nuts. Anyway, question. I'd like to come back up into the 90s and do some synchronization between my laptop and a desktop. And I've looked at Synchronize and Briefcase, and I have no idea where to start.
Okay, what do you have for...
They're both XP.
Okay.
Is there an easy solution to... What I want to do is when I go on a trip, I want to look and see and feel this very similar to what I have on my desktop, you know, regarding email and data that I have.
Well, unless the two systems are set up exactly and your data is located in the same place, the exact look and feel would be difficult to duplicate. But you could probably do a search on a site like CNET, and I'm sure someone's come up with a way, you know, and it's probably even free or minimal cost to do what you're looking for. So you're saying, okay, I use my desktop at home, and then I want to take my laptop with me out on the road,
yeah,
and it's going to have the look and feel of my desktop, and then when I'm out there, you know, I feel like I'm at home. When I come home, I'm going to sync up my data, and everything's good.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So the key thing is making sure that your layout or your file management for your data is the same on both systems.
Yes.
And then probably finding a software program that does desktop laptop synchronization. I'm pretty sure it's out there. I don't know specifically of a name of one, but
I think this was big back in the 90s.
Yeah, there used to be programs like LapLink and some of the others out there, and I'm sure that you'll be able to find something to do that.
Yeah. Okay, I haven't yet, but
you will. Thanks, Steve.
It's always asking the question, reading the answer, and understanding why you didn't get the right answer until you get it. Learn how to ask the question again.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about your computer today and your software, wondering whether or not the information that has been accumulated on you and about you is more than you want? That's something we can talk about as well with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can join us there with a question or comment. George in Glendale, we'll turn to you next. Hi, George. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. You used the phrase earlier, clean slate. Well, I've got an Apple computer desktop and a Roadrunner, and I get my emails on both of them. And every so often I get something from Roadrunner saying, well, your email box or whatever, pardon the lack of technology, is 70% full or 80% full. And so I start trying to delete things from the Roadrunner email receiver, and it takes forever. You have to do one at a time, and it takes sometimes as much as 45 seconds to a minute to do that. Is there any efficient way of getting rid of, like, 10, 15 to 20 of them? There's 25 on a page. Is there any way to get rid of that, or do you have to do one at a time?
No, you should be able to do of them.
Well, there's a couple of things going on. One is if you're logging in with a computer and you don't have the setting to download and delete the email that is left up on Roadrunner, that's one thing. Some people want it to be that way and others don't. So it's a user choice whether or not to download your email and then actually delete it from being up in their their electronic post office box for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I download it and then I hit the delete button, and then it takes 30, 45 seconds for it to be deleted. Mm-hmm. And I go to the next one and do the same thing. And
well, the other thing is, one is web, you know, the proper web access to your Roadrunner account, which should give you a couple of options in terms of how many or the number of messages you're able to see at any one time. Typically, you can, by default, it may be 10, 25. You can change it to 50, 200, 1,000. Just depends on the system that they're using. But that's something that you may want to call them up and ask them, you know, for, you know, how, you know, gaining web access to your email and how to make those changes so that you can see more of them. And then you can typically hit a checkbox and it'll do all the email in that screen. And then you can just go down the list and selectively choose the ones that you do not want to delete and then just delete all the others.
So the best thing I can do then is call Roadrunner and have them explain what you in detail to me with the computer in front of me of how to get rid of 20 of these at one time.
Right. You want
you should be able to get rid of 1,000 at a time.
Yeah, you want web access and how to change the number of messages, the list of messages you're seeing on the screen at one time so that you can delete more than 1 or 10.
Well, if I could delete 10, I'd be even happier. Mm-hmm. It has to be one at a time.
Yeah, the one other way to do it is there's a service called Mail, M-A-I-L, the number 2, and then web.com. And typically when you log into that, you'll see your email list will be about 10, but you can change it to, I believe it's 50 or 100 or all of them. And then you can, again, click on one box, and it'll highlight all of them. So yeah, that's another way to do it as well.
Sometimes on my junk mail, if I forget to go through it, I might have 1,000,
mm-hmm.
and I can do them all in once.
Yeah.
And it takes me 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there you go, George. There's hope. There's mm-hmm. hope for you. Dave in Deerfield, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, guys. I have a HP computer with a Windows 7 system, and I'm a novice, I guess, and how do you get these things up, like a privacy policy, now lately from Valve's, or your Java auto updates, and your Adobe readers and stuff like that? How do you know if you should update them or use those, or just ignore them and they'll go away, or... Help me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of the updates are because of what they call security breaches, and it may only affect a small segment of users. It may affect a large segment of users. You should be able to gain access to that information as far as what the update is covering.
Okay.
The other thing is whenever a new device is launched, particularly with Adobe, they almost always push out an update. So if there's a patch to like the iPhone or the iPad or to the Mac or to the PC, here it comes, you know.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
it may happen like twice in a week because maybe they goofed on the patch and they had to do it
first time around,
and they had to do it or do it again.
Okay, I do have the Norton mm-hmm. stuff, so that will
you're worried that
I'm just wondering if this Valve, I guess it is, corporation. I haven't even looked into that much. Mm-hmm. But then the Java, most of audio auto updates, that's a legitimate thing that you should have to do or shouldn't worry about it? Or I'm pretty novice on this. So
yeah. Typically, they're not necessary, you know, on an everyday basis, but probably on a weekly basis, you may want to, you know, do the updates to keep your system.
Yeah, we don't have anything. It's just the computer and a printer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have anything else tied into it.
Yep.
So, okay, I mean.
You know, the other thing is Microsoft will typically have at least a monthly update as related to what they consider malicious viruses and worms and things out there. So they'll push that out there to make sure that all the Windows systems are aware of that. It's a user choice whether or not you want to have it. As far as Norton goes, Norton will typically push to you what the updates are.
Okay.
And you know, antivirus protection is never 100% because there's always something that's trying to sneak through.
But if you don't
keep it current, then you're a lot worse off than you know.
Yeah.
Can I ask you another? Like my daughter lives in Fort Myers Beach, Florida,
mm-hmm.
and there where she works, there's supposed to be a camera to look at. She works right next to the pier that's in the, on the islands there near Fort Myers Beach, and to watch that, to see what that camera is doing, it's mm-hmm. asking for some kind of a little program to go in. Are typically those all right to install? Or
sure.
Okay.
Well, what you're talking about is access to viewing a webcam.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So when Java keeps telling me that they have an update, that it's probably all right to let it yeah. rip and see what happens.
Yeah, Java and Adobe and Microsoft are the more popular updates.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other one that you mentioned, I think you said
Valve,
I haven't heard of.
Okay.
And it may be it may be a program that's installed on your system, and you just need to find out who it's coming from.
I'll check into it a little bit. I kind of thought what you've told me was it's all right to do these major names that I said, but I just wanted to be a little bit assured.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling, Myrna in Milwaukee. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Over the years in setting up a username and password, I might have hit the wrong key and things were misspelled. But the computer saved it. I don't think I clicked, keep this or save this name or save this password or something. But the password is no problem. But when I go to the username box, several misspellings come up, and I always have to choose, which is the right one that I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
How do I delete those?
What you should be able to do is when you click on that box and you start typing the name and you see the list that comes up wrong, just simply, pull your down arrow over it and then hit the delete button, and that should remove it from the list.
Oh, so in a way you're darkening it, and then you hit delete.
Correct. Yep, that mm-hmm. should work.
So easy. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And turn to Gary and Rhinelander next. Hi, Gary.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm having a problem with my internet provider. And being out in the rural country, I probably don't have a whole lot of choices. This provider, it uses they say they're not a dial-up. They do use the phone line that goes into a modem, and then I hook up my computer to that. Is that a different type of a dial-up, or are they telling me that it's not and it really isn't?
No, it's probably DSL.
Okay.
Yep.
And so through DSL, my best I've had for a download speed is like 1.14.
Mm-hmm.
Can I switch to something different or find something different if you could tell me how? Is satellite better or will it cause problems with programs?
Well, satellite may not be faster than that. Have you talked to your internet provider about faster speed, or is that the maximum speed they offer?
Out here, that seems to be the fastest speed. What the person has mm-hmm. said in the office, they mm-hmm. says, well, we'll put a push in for you.
Right.
No idea what
yeah.
that is.
It may be limited because of the bandwidth that they have access to. So, think about their pipeline has to be split up between all the IPs, the internet protocol ports that they're giving, people like you access to. So if they have a limited amount and a limited number of users on the system, and if you're all on at the same time, that could create a bottleneck. So, they may be limiting it for that reason because they don't have, this great big pipe that they have to share, like typically in a large city like Madison or even Chicago or near a large university like UW-Madison. In the Madison area, there's what they call a sonnet ring, which is a huge pipeline that everybody taps into and then resells that.
Well, in the city before I had cable, and I know that everyone used it like you're saying.
Right.
When I was sold this, they said that this IP is dedicated to you.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And now, the service person who came says, well, that ain't right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is in a sense that when you're hooked up with your DSL, you're actually occupying a port on their system. And there are other factors that control the speed, not only the fact that they may be limiting, you know, what your top end is, but your distance from where your port, your line actually connects to their switch.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another unknown, which is the actual quality of the equipment could put a question mark on how fast you have access. So, for example, I actually experienced that personally where the local service provider hooked me up with DSL, put in a new line, and said, hey, you know, you're going to get up to 3 meg of internet speed. But in fact, it would go in and out of service, and I was lucky if I ever got over 2.
Right.
So I would have them come out, they do this service stuff, and then they actually worked on switching the equipment in their central switch to try and fix it, but it never got better.
Hmm.
So they said their claim is up to, but we don't guarantee that you will get it.
Okay.
So there are those other trade-offs that go in with the language that they use, that they say up to, but you may not actually experience it.
Okay, one quick question. Also, that I've noticed that when it rains, it seems like my speed goes in half or even and worse. Mm. I mean, to me, that sounds like a ground issue problem.
Yeah, that might be, because I don't see why that would be affected, you know, unless, you know, something shorting out would make things not work, but to have, you know, half speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only other option I can think of, and it might be more costly, I'm not sure what you're paying for it, is some of the cell providers like U.S. Cellular are starting to offer, you know, rural area internet access. And I believe last show we had someone say they had up to 5 meg, and you can set up an access point and hook up like 5 wireless devices to it. So
you have to have a very good reception to do that cell reception.
Right.
Yep. There you go.
Yep.
Thanks for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call, Gary. And Mark in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
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 I just tried downloading something from AOL, which was probably my mistake there. But I am now getting a blue screen that says stop C4021 fatal system error. And I can get it to safe mode, but anything after safe mode goes right back to the blue screen with the whole little write out thing.
Mm-hmm.
And does this mean I'm looking at a new computer finally?
What version of the operating system are you using? Windows XP? Windows
XP. Okay. XP Home.
Okay.
It's a 2004 computer.
Okay. A couple of things. One is you might be able to do a system restore. There might have been something when you were downloading it that just caused something in your operating system to be off and causing that blue screen error message. And if you get in the safe mode, go into Accessories, System Tools, System Restore, and then look and see what kind of restore points you have access to.
Okay.
If you're affected by, you know, a virus or worm, sometimes they kind of cut that off and don't give you access to restore it, which is a pain.
I tried the last known good configuration one and got absolutely nothing off it.
Yeah, I would go to the restore point. I wouldn't do the last known.
Unfortunately, I don't see a restore. I don't know which one that would be under.
It's accessories.
Accessories.
So you click start.
Okay.
Then programs, accessories, system tools, and then system restore.
Okay.
So that's one thing. And then the other thing is if you did have access to the internet web, is to take right down that error message that you're getting and then do a search on it, because it's actually gotten better where those messages can be found and some of the solutions are posted in terms of how to deal with them. You have to be a little bit careful with that, because sometimes somebody's trying to sell you a product
right.
that may not really work. but they're using it to entice you to say, hey, I can fix your computer. You need to download and buy this thing. But there are sites out there that actually describe the problem and may have a list of fixes or solutions for you.
Okay, well, I'll go fire up the other computer then and try it.
But I would try the System Restore first.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Email from Carl in Balsam Lake. This weekend, my daughter's house was burglarized, and they stole two Mac computers. She needs the serial number of her computer but didn't save it. Do you have any advice for her? I heard you can track a computer if you have an iPhone, and wondering if that's true, and what's the best way to save songs, important information, and pictures?
Well, they have Apple's got that mobile. Maybe they folded it into their iCloud product. It used to be Mobile Me, and you could turn it on so that the iPhone could be tracked. As far as the Macs, you know, that information is in the you click all the way up in the top left. I think it's, you know, I do it all the time, you know, but you can click up in the top left and then gain access to your system info, and it's got all that detail there. You know,
but if you don't have the computer.
You know, trying to go back to your original documentation, there's probably a pretty good chance you might have the serial number if you can find that, because they typically list that stuff. As far as backing up things, you know, I was amazed. My daughter lost her hard drive on her MacBook Pro, took it into the Apple store. They put in a new hard drive, and then she hooked up her Time Machine and restored it, and it was back up and running like nothing ever happened. So if you have an external hard drive, either hooked up through USB or FireWire, and run Time Machine on a regular basis, you know, you can restore your stuff right back to where it was. The key thing is locking down your computer so that if, you know, a lot of people don't really like doing that, but, you know, if you password protect your system, someone can't really log in to your computer unless they have that password. I know Macs are more difficult to break into than Windows machines. I have no problems, you know, re-logging into a Windows machine, but a Mac, I haven't been challenged to the point of actually doing that. I might be able to figure it out, but I'm just saying that if you really want to protect your stuff, you know, make sure you password protect it.
Let's turn to Jessica in Milwaukee. Hi, Jessica.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Occasionally, I will go into my remove programs to see if there's anything extra there that I can get rid of. And I will see multiple versions of, let's say, Java or Adobe. Do I need to keep the older versions, or can I remove those?
With Adobe, you can remove the earlier ones. The Java, I've had issues with that, and they usually don't take up as much space as Adobe's products.
Okay.
You know, you can always experiment where you can create a restore point, remove the programs, and if it's a problem, you can always restore it back to it.
Mm-hmm. Or I could possibly just go to the website and re-download the current version, right? If I removed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Gertrude wonders, how do you get a list of contacts on Gmail? She doesn't see a link on Hotmail. It's called Contacts.
Oh, if you look underneath on the left-hand side, some of those symbols, if you click down on them, I know you'll find the list of
down
contacts.
Down on the left side, okay.
Yeah, and there's so many different areas to click on. You know, you click on the top right, and there's like settings and logging off, and, you know, there's some things you can easily miss. And then, you know, using the documents. There's so many different things. I mean, you don't even need Microsoft Word. You can just use Google Docs and keep all your stuff, you know, up in the cloud. And they have a lot of features to use. But you just have to kind of click around, and you'll definitely find it. You can also import your contacts from other systems so that you have them not only in maybe your desktop email system, but also in Gmail. Mm-hmm. So when you travel, you just take it with you.
Paul in Rice Lake. Hello, thank you for calling.
Good morning, how are you?
Good.
Hi.
That, two questions. I have a Gmail account and I have a Hotmail account. My Gmail account is for my business. But during my, for my personal account, the Hotmail, which has been there for 8 years, I continuously get bombarded with this junk mail, like college stuff or student loans or LASIK surgery or dating sites and stuff. I'm not interested. So I click on those sites and I push junk, meaning that they're junk. Don't let them come through, correct?
Yep.
But then the next day I keep on getting more of them. So it's like every day I've got like 5 to 10 of these things that I just hit, keep on getting junk and I keep on getting them back. With the Gmail account, I don't have that problem. So what do I do? What's going on here? Why do I keep on getting stuff that's not supposed to be getting through?
Two different companies. One is Google is Gmail and Hotmail is Microsoft. There may be some information on Microsoft's site as related to Hotmail and changing some of the filtering for the spam and junk mail that you may want to look into. There might be some tweaks that you can do for that. Versus Google probably realizes that people don't want to be bothered with that stuff and maybe have their filters set up a little bit differently, so they're better about, you know, eliminating that.
Okay.
So it's two different services, so there might be, you know, settings differences that you need to look at.
Okay, because that's my thoughts. When I hit junk, it's supposed to block it out from that point, that website from coming through to me, correct?
Right.
That's what's supposed to be.
Yeah. The other thing is it's possible because, you know, the spam, the people or the companies that are trying to spam and get things through to you are constantly changing, you know, their way of reaching out to you. So if, you know.
They'll change a digit or something on their email address so I'm not catching it, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Good luck. Yeah. Thank you.
It can be frustrating. And unfortunately, this stuff is also originating not only in this country, but it's coming from overseas.
Yeah.
So there aren't any international laws that, you know, they have this, what was it, canned spam or the Spam Act and all this stuff. And someone asked me in the office about it. And I said, you know what? I said, that's great. And it says all this language. But is there someone walking around out there handing out fines? Is there someone, you know, knocking on doors or driving around and saying, you know, you're guilty and I'm serving you? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Mike and Dousman. Hi, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a Toshiba laptop that has Windows Vista, which I know can be a problem. And I'm having problems with the wireless. It seems that about half of the time when I start the computer, the wireless isn't working. And if you look in the lower right, it'll just have a red X over the two computers.
Right.
And if I right-click on it to connect to a network, it can't find the network and can't connect. So I'll have to restart the computer, and it may work, it may not. Sometimes it works fine. So my question is, I have Time Warner, and the cable modem from Time Warner that goes to my wireless modem is like 2 to 3 feet from my laptop. So my question is, would it be more reliable for me just to go with a wire, with the cable, I don't know what you call that, and kind of a few-part question here, if I can do that, would that be more reliable, and is wired faster than wireless, and would that be hard to do? Would my computer know how to do that, or would I have to go in settings and change that, or what do you think about that?
Okay. A lot of good questions. Number one, one thing I would try to just see if you can improve the wireless hookup with the Vista computer is just making sure that the device drivers for the wireless hardware in your laptop is current.
Okay.
Sometimes that presents a problem. The other thing is related to wired and wireless. Is it faster? It's almost always a given that wired is going to be faster than wireless. If you have a wireless router that has ports on the back, then you can run a cable from one of those ports into your laptop, and it should automatically sense that it's wired, and it will use the wired connection before the wireless connection.
Hmm.
In the wireless modem, Is that what you call it, a modem?
It's not a modem. It's hardware. The wireless hardware in the laptop.
Oh, no, I mean the wireless Netgear device with the antenna on it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That has, like, I think it's either 3 or 4 ports for a cable. Would it matter which one I put it in?
Nope, doesn't matter which port. The only limiting thing is the speed in which those ports typically, for most people, is usually like maybe 100 megabits per second is usually the top end. They're selling gigabit switches. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the earlier, even current today, you don't see a lot of them sold in the stores with more than 100 because typically that's fine for most people.
But do you think that would be more reliable? Because when the wireless works on the laptop, mm-hmm. it's fast, but yeah. so many times it doesn't work. It's frustrating.
Yeah, it'll be more reliable. The other thing is sometimes the wireless router may have firmware that needs to be updated, and that can also affect the speed as well.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Peter Green today about your personal computer and your software. I hope you'll join in if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. Or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We also have a link to Pete's InfoStar site there as well. And you can just click on it to get there. Joe in Franklin has a question for you. Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Larry and Peter.
Hey.
I have an optical mouse that seems to have a mind of its own. Sometimes it works fine. Other times, anywhere between dragging and not at all. I've tried different mouse pad surfaces, and sometimes I have to use the shirt I'm wearing as a mouse pad surface. Is it just dying, or any suggestions as to what might the problem be?
In terms of how it hooks up to the computer, is it through USB, or is it
no, it's an optical mouse with an antenna plugged into a USB.
Okay, so it's a wireless.
Right,
yeah.
an optical mouse, yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe you've got some gunk underneath, you know, the mouse. Just make sure that that's, you know, clear.
I've cleaned the window.
Okay, all right. Sometimes, I mean, those things do go bad. I've seen them go bad. And, you know, it's just kind of giving you a hint that it might be on its way out. And if it's frustrating you, it may not be a bad idea to get another one. And if you substitute it and the problem goes away, then you knew it was on its way out. If the problem is still there, you know, if you're using the same USB port with the receiver, you probably want to, you know, change that. You can also do that with your existing one, is just change the port that the receiver is on and reinstall it and see if that helps.
Okay.
There's also another, I believe there's usually a button on the mouse to have it reconnect. I don't know if you've tried that at all.
Done that too.
Okay. Yeah, but they're appliances and those things do fail.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen numerous times.
There you go. Probably time to try out a new one, see what happens. Thanks for calling, Joe.
At least they've come down in price. They used to be super expensive, but you can pick a wide range of, and including keyboards as well.
Nancy and Phillips, turning to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a real silly question. I live way out in the country, and we have a neighbor that one time I clicked on my wireless internet thing, that bar thing on the bottom, and it looked like there was another name on my that was connected to my internet. So apparently it was a neighbor. Is he stealing any of my information? Can I make sure that nobody gets on there? What can I do?
Well, probably what you saw was another SSID or a wireless network name.
I did.
That was out there, and that's not someone on your system. That's being broadcast from your neighbor for their wireless network.
Oh.
So just letting you know that there's another wireless network.
So what you need to make sure is that, you know, if you're concerned about that kind of stuff, is that your wireless network is actually secure and you're using some kind of security protocol and access code to log on to your wireless network. So, for example, let's say the wireless network name was called Football or whatever. You would see Football in there. And then in order to access that wireless network, when you click on it, you might have to type in, you know, your access code in order to gain access to being on that wireless network. It's not automatic the first time, but your system will recognize it on a regular basis because typically the default is to reconnect if it sees that again, and it's going to know what the security is.
Okay, good, because I never have to type anything after I'm just on there, and I think, well, maybe everybody else can do that too.
No, but you need to make sure it says that it's secure. It'll when you see the list, typically there'll be a like a lock to show you that it's actually secure, and you can hover over it, and it'll tell you that.
Okay.
If it says it's unsecure, then you need to, you know, change your access, and that means that you need to go into the router and log into it as an administrator. So there's an admin user, and then there's a password, and then there's typically a menu system that you can go into and change, you know, how your wireless network is set up and the security and so forth. A lot of the places that come out and do that for people today, unfortunately, they set them up, and they set them up with such crazy passwords that to me is ridiculous that, you know, you should make it so it's easy for you to work with, so that if you've got a relative or friend that comes over and say, here, this is all you got to type in when you log on to our network, versus, you know, capital A, 3, lowercase z, XM, you know, exclamation, you know, you could go crazy.
Okay, but just because I saw another name on there doesn't mean that somebody's using my thing.
No. That's a broadcast of another wireless network.
Okay.
And that's called an SSID.
Okay, I feel much better. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're thanks, welcome. Nancy. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I've had this icon coming up on my screen. It's called E-List, just E-L-I-S-T-S. And I didn't put it up there that I know of. And coincidentally, I've been getting a lot of junk email. I've tried to right-click on the thing. I was afraid to left-click on it, and I right-clicked on it, and I tried to scan it with Microsoft Security Essentials. It said it completed the scan, but I remember seeing a message about having to be an administrator and this and that to open it. I was just wondering if that rang a bell or if that was connected to the junk emails.
Well, if it's a desktop icon, you should be able to right mouse click on it, click on properties, and it should show you where it's located. You know, if it belongs to a program, you know, if you click on it, you know, it should launch the program that it belongs to. If it's going to a location out on the internet, you know, maybe it's something you inadvertently had saved when you were on a web page. But you should be able to delete it. If it's a problem deleting it, you could download a program that's free called Malwarebytes. And within that software, there's a tool called File Assassin. So as long as you know the location of it, you should be able to point, browse to that file location, actually delete it and remove it.
Okay, and when I just look at security, I look at the properties, it says application unknown or in permissions, it's given full permission. That kind of sounds like it could be an unknown application. It says you think I should just try to open it up first and see where it's coming from.
Well, if you really question it, I would probably just get rid of it. I mean, if it seems unfamiliar to you, and, you know, I wouldn't even chance and just get rid of it.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah. Sometimes people get email messages and there are attachments to them, and you don't realize that you're actually, you know, saving it, and you don't know where you're saving it, but they have ulterior motives and they save it for you where they want to be.
Mm. Caller from Milwaukee thinks her computer was hacked into. Passwords were changed. There are websites showing up in the browser history she's never gone to. Is it possible for web addresses to be in the history without someone actually visiting them physically with that computer?
Probably not. The only way would be if someone had the ability to, you know, upload the history from a file and, you know where to put it. And on a Microsoft system, that's usually a pretty convoluted address.
Yeah.
So
somebody would have had to get into her computer.
Mm-hmm.
So she needs to look at who may have had access to my computer.
Yeah.
Because it's probably...
Yeah, and again, maybe using something like System Restore, if it's still turned on, to go back to, a prior time.
Yeah.
Can eliminate any programs that were installed during that period.
Yeah. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our computer consultant, with us until 12:30 today. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Computers can be a tool or a toy or sometimes both at the same time, but however you use them, you might have trouble keeping up with the latest news and product releases. And you know what? That's where we come in. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Peter Green of InfoStar is with us till 12:30 to tell you about new developments and to answer your computer questions. He also will share his top 10 list for the month of useful websites. And I hope you'll call in with your computer questions at 1-800-642-1234. Don't forget to visit our Facebook page as well. Hope you will. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. And while you're there, I hope you'll click like. And if you do that, we will send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. So hope you'll please do that today. And we'll be back with Peter Green right after this look at the news on the Ideas Network. If you're like me, you use a computer every day at home, at work, both of those. Certainly I rely on them a lot. I imagine you do as well. And we both rely on Peter Green. Peter is an independent computer consultant. He comes by the first Monday of every month, usually, to help us help you with your computer problems. Peter, always great to have you along. Thanks for being with us again today.
Always fun, Larry.
And this time of the show, we usually have, or you have, a top 10 list of great websites to go to. What have you got?
And if you include the list of all those search things, it's probably more like a top 30. If you go to infostar.com, click on current top 10 or the top 10 archives, and then scroll down to today's date, they're all there. First one is called hometownlocator.com, and it's for the 50 United States, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C. Includes profiles for 179,000 cities, towns, neighborhoods, maps, directions, a whole bunch of stuff there, historical data.
Yeah.
The next one, I don't know if the NHL is going to have a lockout this year. It's kind of looking that way, but there's a website called eliteprospects.com. That lists all the up-and-coming ice hockey prospects for those fans. This next site is a way to gain entrance to official state web resources that provide online access to property tax and related information. And it's called, I'll spell it, it's N-E-T-R-O-N-L-I-N-E. So
Netronly or something?
Netron. I don't know. Net online. Netronline. Number four, SeatGeek.com. It's got sports, concerts, theater tickets, all in one site. Number five is called Healthline.com, and you can search over 1,300 conditions, 1,500 symptoms, and 20,000 treatments and medications. Radarius, R-A-D-A-R-I-S.com, is another comprehensive people search resource. If you're looking for doctors, it's a resource that includes reviews and ratings. It's called ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com. An international travel site, and I've listed a couple of others that qualify for that. It's called Vayama, VAYAMA.com. Number 9 is a song lyric resource to check out called JumboJimbo.com. And number 10 is a Sports Spider. So it's sports and then SPYDER.com. Might be a useful resource for people that are in a fantasy games.
Very cool.
Give them some more information to arm themselves with.
And, of course, that's all at Infostar.com.
Yep.
There you go. Dean in Middleton has a question for you, Pete. Let's go there. Hi, Dean.
Hi.
Hi.
Peter, I was wondering, a few months ago you went on a vacation and you said how you took your passport and credit cards and put them on your computer in a different file,
right,
a different password. Could you explain just how you did that?
What I typically do is I'll scan in what I need access to, and then I'll email it to myself in one of my online accounts, typically my Gmail account, because I don't give that out a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy to gain access to, and then it's an attached file that I can access wherever I am. So as long as I can log into a computer, I can gain access to it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, you just
pretty straightforward.
You scan in the information you need, and it's just, you know, as long as you feel comfortable with, like, you know, hanging it up there, and I do, you know, you have access to it when you travel. So if you lose anything, you at least have the ability to, you know, say, here, this is who I am, and here's the information to back it up, because you can gain access to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just what I was looking for.
And then make sure your computer is password protected.
Yeah,
you're traveling.
Yeah, I'll also make color copies of that information. And when I traveled with my family years ago, I created a thing I fondly called the Bible, and it had all the itinerary in it, and it had the information. We kept it with us all the time, and it included the passport picture pages that were color printed after being scanned in or copied, and then I just protected them with the clear shipping tape, and I would give them to the kids so that they wouldn't have to keep the passports with them. I would keep the passports, but at least we had their information on them in case they ever needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Pretty good.
Great
idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. But a follow-up on that Wi-Fi issue, mm-hmm, from Josh, Facebooked us. The last caller's problem with the previous caller's problem with his wireless not working is more than likely the Netgear router he's using. I have the same internet service and had the same problems with a Netgear router, mm-hmm, I used to own. Purchasing a Cisco router solved all my problems. The less expensive Netgear router had constant connectivity issues with Windows Vista and 7, mm-hmm, machines.
Yeah, I have experienced compatibility issue with not only router equipment, but also with phones. Sometimes cordless phones can be have compatibility issues with the phone company switches. So there are equipment compatibility issues that, although rare, can affect that kind of stuff. So that's great. Great information.
Jim in Cedarburg, hello. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Thanks for being there, guys. I cannot view videos if I want to go to YouTube, etc. It says an error has occurred. The box is usually black, but the screen, when I click on it, just says an error has occurred.
You may want, if it's telling you the error has occurred and it's referring to a program, you may want to, you know, reinstall if you're using like a Windows Media Player. Maybe it's Adobe Flash. There's usually, when they give you an error message, it's related to a program that's having a problem. Sometimes just running the uninstall and downloading the latest version fixes it. Typically what I would do is make sure that if the program is having a problem, is uninstall it, reboot the machine, bring it back up, and then gain access to the software and reinstall it and see if that helps fix it.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. And Tim in Verona, hi.
Hello, gentlemen. Hi. You're talking to a complete computer illiterate here.
Okay.
I get all the help I can get. But basically what I've got is I've got a it's probably a four or five-year-old Dell Inspiron 530. I went to the computer the other day, and I've got a completely black screen on it, and my the arrow for the mouse will move around the screen, but absolutely nothing else. And then what I did was I can go into safe mode, but I can't get much going on from there.
Okay. When you go in, what you may want to try to do is what we talked about earlier in the show, is if you go in, if you can get into safe mode, go to Programs, Accessories, System Tools, and see if you can do a system restore, select a restore point.
I did do that, and okay. I did it for a few days before that, before the issue was there, and it didn't seem to help. Now, maybe going back further might help. I don't know. I didn't go that far.
Yeah, you may want to try that again and see if it does help.
All right.
If it's still having problems,
I can get internet on safe mode. I can't get sound to work on safe mode.
Mm-hmm.
No screensaver seems to come up on the safe mode.
Safe mode, there are a lot of things that start getting compromised.
Right.
You know, if you're picking safe mode with network access, that's why you're getting the internet. You may want to try it without the network access and see if that helps when you do the restore. You know, just bring it up in just plain old safe mode, and then and then pick a restore point. You may want to try, you know, if you haven't installed any software recently, you know, you can go back to one of the earlier ones because it doesn't have any effect on any of your data files. It only affects any programs that have been installed on your system and updates.
Yeah, and I really wouldn't care if it took out a program that maybe been installed recently.
Yeah. Yep.
If that doesn't work, though, where am I at then? Should I get a new computer? It's 5 years old, probably.
It might be a hardware issue is related to the video card. You might want to try to reinstall the device driver and see if that has an effect. And then the other.
Ironically, I bought a backup just like a week before.
Mm-hmm.
Never backed up anything in my life and used it. And I've got a Seagate thing here that's got everything backed up on it.
The backup and just make sure that it really does have everything on it.
Before
you accept it at face value that it's telling you it does.
Right.
You know, just
and then I guess my question is, can I transfer the information from that to, say, an Apple if I go to an Apple computer next?
You will be able to. It just depends on the software that you're using on the Apple. There are ways to transfer email between PCs and Macs. Actually, one of the interim steps is to actually put it up in the cloud on like Google Gmail, and then you can pull it from the Gmail down to the Apple computer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a technique that you can use for that.
I'm sure if I go Apple, they can help me out with that too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But all right. Well, thank you, man.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks for calling. And Heather up next from Sparta. Hi, Heather.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One thing, and this wasn't my question, but the lady who called in about the Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
I actually one time had a warning that someone had got in or something, which surprised me, but it came up on the screen, but I don't know, because they set a password with your router, you know, when
mm-hmm.
you set it up, but my question is that I have two computers, and one I gave to my folks, and they're older, and they've hardly used it. But I had put Windows 2003 on it. It was an XP, and I have my own XP older one I want to use to help my niece and nephew with their homeschool. But it takes so long to log up anything, and I've done all kind of cleaners, can't find a virus on any. But when the task manager runs, at least I've noticed on mine, you get a whole bunch of programs. You know, things you're wondering how you could have that much. It's like the virtual memory is too full all
right.
the time.
Do you have a lot of little icons in your write system tray when the computer comes up? All those little color pictures?
Not a lot. Maybe four or so.
How old are the systems? How much memory do they have?
Like I said, my mother's I got in like 2003 for. She's hardly used it. There's nothing on it.
Right.
So that's why I can't figure out why, you know. And mine has more on it, but I went through and I deleted everything, and it said it took care of the memory problem. And then as soon as I'm on, there's like hundreds of programs start up on the task manager, even though I've deleted everything. I've went through, I've wiped it out like the machine said. Right away it fills up with memory, and hers is just so slow. I mean, I had trouble with the internet. It took like 45 minutes to get into the internet, you know.
Have you gone into MS config and in the startup, and then, you know, looked at all the different things that you have starting up when the computer comes on? Because some of them are icon based where they're in the system tray, and then others are not.
Okay, you know how, you know what I'm with the task manager,
right?
Okay, like I started having problems, and it runs so slow that I'll end up double clicking, so I'll get the same program running twice, say the internet or something. So I'll go to erase it, and there'll be just like 50 things on there, and I haven't touched any of them.
But have you typed in msconfig?
No, I don't think I did that.
Okay, if you type in msconfig or run msconfig, msconfig, hit the enter, and then go into the startup tab, you'll see, if you see a lot of things with checks in the checkboxes, those are all things that are going to start up when your computer turns on.
Okay, even if I don't see them, then, okay.
Yeah.
Now, how do I get to that MS? Where do I type that run
just,
MS?
You click on start, and then click on run, and type in MSCONFIG, and hit enter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you think on the Dell and mine that's doing that? I mean, even though my mom's hardly used hers, how would she get so much stuff would start up like that?
It's possible. I mean, there. You know, if you're doing anything on the computer and you inadvertently either add a program or don't realize what you're answering yes to, it may add that to the startup, and then it's just going to be there every time you use it.
Okay. Would it be worthy, too, to try, like, System Mechanic or something? I've heard pros and cons.
I would probably do the msconfig first.
Yeah, give that a try, and good luck.
Another simple way to speed up some of the XP systems is also to get, like, a very inexpensive thumb drive. That'll do, I think it's called Ready Boost, and XP should support that. So you could get like a 1 gig memory stick for probably, you know, $3-4 and just put that in a USB port. And that might help a little too.
There you go. Good luck, Heather. Thank you for calling. And John in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, John.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question regarding some Excel spreadsheets. I was updating them, and then when I clicked on the save, I got this circle started revolving and revolving, and after a couple of minutes, this dialog box opened up, and so now I have two versions of these files. Which one do I want to save? So I think I clicked on the wrong one, because now everything converted to read-only, every sheet in a workbook. I checked the attributes for every worksheet. None of them are checked as read-only. I looked at the permission. None of them are checked as protected files. So I can't save anything unless I put in my changes, save a copy, but then the copy's still read-only. So I don't know how to get this read-only eliminated. Plus, if I right-click on every worksheet, delete doesn't even appear as an option.
Sounds like something inadvertently got changed in your Excel options.
Yeah.
Where that setting is you'll have to look for it. But when you click on the very top left menu option in Excel, I guess it really depends on which version of Excel you're using, but you should find a button that says, you know, options. When you click on that, you're going to have a whole list of areas to check out.
Right.
To look at, you know, how it's saving your file and permissions. So it might have to do with something with trust as well.
Yeah, I went into that too, and I tried, because I searched on the internet. You know, when you click on the help in these programs, it takes you all these things on the internet. And I tried everything people are suggesting. And this one, too, check the trusted center, and
What I would look for, you know, if you're looking for help on the internet for, you know, Excel topics, PowerPoint, Word, and so forth, is look for mvps.org. Microsoft Most Valuable Professional.
Okay.
Or type in Microsoft Big List, I believe will get you the same result.
Sure.
But I think it's mvps.org.
Okay.
And then look for an Excel person that's certified in the software.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, John, for calling. Marianne in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi. We have a computer which our kids have been using to write papers on, but it's never been hooked up to the internet.
Okay.
And they have to look up some of their books online for school. They're age 16 and 17.
Yeah.
And so tonight they want to start going online to look this up, and I want to find out how to prevent them from spending time on Facebook and, you know, things like that that just use up time. I want them just to do their homework only. How can I do this?
Well, one is setting the rules and checking in on them, which, you know, is time-consuming. The other is, you know, the sneaky way, which is installing software that basically would allow you to log back into their system when they're not around to see what they're actually doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's time consuming and yeah, kind of a pain. But I would say, setting some ground rules and, you know, checking in with them and seeing if they're adhering to them and just using some trust because,
okay,
you know, there are other things in the world that you got to trust them on. And,
parental controls, do they work? They'll work to some extent, but
but, you know, sometimes that stuff can really...
Where's the computer? Is it in the bedroom?
In the living room.
Yeah,
that's
what we did with our kids for a long time, is keeping it in a central place so it's easy to observe. In the browser, you can go in and change... You can put in a list of sites that you could actually block them from. That you don't want them to go to, and then it'll be blocked. So you can do that. But I think the most important thing that parents can do is setting ground rules, keeping the computer located in a central place, and developing, you know, trust and, you know, just, you know, you pull privileges,
yeah,
you know, because there are other things that, you know, other than the computer that are, you know, worthwhile to them.
Yeah.
That you can remove as an influence in their lives if they don't listen to you.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right, thanks for.
But all the browsers have, you know, a way of plugging in sites that they can't visit. I would be more concerned about, and we talked about this a long time ago, and then they finally did it where pornography sites can register .XXX. But and I said from day one, you know, if they would have done that from the beginning, it would have been so easy to filter that stuff out.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not the case now.
But, yeah.
I think central location, developing trust and policy and, you know, just checking in from time to time and making sure they're complying is key.
In the last 40 seconds or so, Betty's been getting unwanted emails, about 40 a day, addressed to undisclosed chartered@charter.net. I have blocked each one, but I still get them. That's similar to what we had earlier.
Yeah, they change the rules so that they keep coming through. You know, they're just, and they could be coming from outside of the country to, or there's systems that just keep regenerating them. So even though you've blocked them, it's a little bit different, and they just keep coming through. The only thing you can really try to do is convey to your internet service provider, you know, the problem, making them aware of it, and they'll try to, you know, tweak their filters a little bit better.
Yeah, that's about all you can do. You certainly, it's real pain.
Yeah.
You know, and you hate to open them. You don't want to open them.
Right.
Otherwise, you've got even more trouble. Pete, it's always a pleasure. You'll be back, actually, the first Monday of next month.
Yep, beginning of October.
So, and that is actually October 1st.
Yep.
So, in the meantime, I hope you have a great day. And thanks a lot for being with us.
It was awesome. Thank you.
Peter Green was with InfoStar, visits us monthly to help with your personal computer problems. Go to InfoStar.com, and we've got the top 10 list there, and he's got a whole lot of information you and I can use to help our computers run a little better. So great to have him along. He'll be back October 1st. Tomorrow, time for Garden Talk. Claire Strader and Megan Kane are with the Community Groundworks and Troy Gardens in Madison, and they have great advice on wonderful veggies. Stay with us.